The Orioles lost a tough one to the Red Sox in their one-game trip to Boston on Thursday night. But we try to look past that as we do a little bit of a deep dive into the Orioles system today and how good it really is. Plus, we learn about Orioles' fifth-round draft pick, Trace Bright. That's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast.
You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Friday, August 12th, 2022, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. And coming up on today's episode, we're going to start by recapping the Orioles 4-3 loss in Boston against the Red Sox on Thursday night. Then we are going to be joined by Lindsey Crosby. He is the host of Locked On MLB Prospects here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're first going to talk about Trace Bright, the Orioles' fifth-round draft selection, the right-handed pitcher they took out of Auburn, because Lindsey covered Auburn baseball this year, knows a lot about Bright. And then we'll talk about the Orioles system as a whole, with Gunnar Henderson being named the new number one prospect in baseball. We'll talk about where Lindsey has him ranked and some other big names in the Orioles system. But that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. And before we get started, just did want to thank you, the listener, for making Locked On Orioles your first podcast listen of the day. We're free and available on all podcast listening platforms, a daily podcast Monday through Friday. You get it on Apple Pods, you get it on Spotify, and of course, you get it right here on the Locked On Orioles YouTube page. Thank you so much to everyone who has subscribed to get us over 1,000 subscribers on the Locked On Orioles YouTube page. That means it's just about time for our giveaway that we promised once we got to 1,000 subscribers. So make sure you come back here on Monday for Monday's episode of the podcast, where I will reveal what the giveaway is and what you have to do to be entered. Now, the first step to enter is to subscribe to the Locked On Orioles YouTube channel. So make sure to do that. There will be one more step that we will talk about on Monday for a fun Orioles giveaway. Again, thank you again for subscribing to the YouTube channel here and making Locked On Orioles your first podcast listen of the day. And for your first listen today, we start with a tough Orioles loss. Final score, Red Sox 4, Orioles 3 on Thursday night in Fenway Park in Boston. Kind of a weird game where, you know, this was part of a series against the Red Sox that was supposed to be played at Fenway Park early in the season, but it was one of two series, along with the series against the Blue Jays, that was wiped out due to the lockout, where the season started 1 week late because of the lockout. And so this game, along with a couple others, were kind of placed in throughout the season. And you remember there was a five-game series in Boston earlier this year. That was one of the games that was placed in. And then you have this one as well, thrown in on a Thursday night that was supposed to be an off day. And after the Orioles had Wednesday's game against the Blue Jays rained out, they had the day off. Then they traveled to Boston for one day. Kind of a weird situation and ended up being kind of a weird game. As I'm going to get you the five things you need to know from the Orioles 4-3 loss to the Red Sox. And the first thing you need to know is, speaking of weird, Dean Kramer just had a weird start in this one for the Orioles. Coming off one of his best starts of the year when he threw 6 1/3 scoreless innings against the Pirates on Friday night, Kramer started off poorly, finished okay, but just was not his best on Thursday. Kramer's final line, he lasted 5 2/3 innings, allowing 4 runs on 6 hits. He struck out 6 and walked only 1, did not allow a home run in this game, threw 87 pitches, and his ERA now at 3.69 on the season. But he did get hit, well, I'd say pretty hard in this game. 11 hard hit balls over 5 2/3 innings for Kramer, who had allowed 8 hard hit balls through 2 2/3 without getting a swing and miss. Now, he did have 9 of those 11 hard hit balls through his first 3 innings, and through those first 3 innings where he'd also given up those first 3 runs. He gave up 1 in the first and 2 more in the third. This Red Sox offense jumped out to a 3-0 lead in this game, but he did settle down and he was pitching better through the next couple of innings. And you know, many talked about on Twitter, you know, that Brandon Hyde should have left Dean Kramer in. He was in the sixth inning, got the first two outs. Then he walked J.D. Martinez, a seven-pitch walk with two outs in a 3-3 game. And Hyde goes to Nick Vespi to face the left-hander Eric Hosmer. It didn't work out. But I thought it was the right decision. I know Dean Kramer had looked a lot better in those last three innings, but overall, he was still getting hit very hard. Really was getting crushed by that Red Sox lineup. I did not want to see him face Hosmer or really anyone else in that lineup. He had kind of gotten to the end of his day. I thought it was the right decision to pull him. Just didn't work out. But on the day, he was heavy four-seamers, 47% of his pitches on the four-seamer, and that pitch worked. 8 of his 11 whiffs on the day came on that four-seam fastball. The velocity was right at his year-long average at 93.4. Did touch 96 a couple of times, but that pitch was dominant. It was all over the strike zone, dotting the edges, get swings and misses, but nothing else was really too great for him. I mean, the cutter was bad. The changeup was all right. The curveball was okay. He threw it 12 more times, but just kind of a tale of two halves of that start, the first three innings and the last 2 2/3 innings from Kramer. At least he finished a little stronger, although the walk was tough because that ended up being the winning run. But hopefully we'll see him look more like that start against the Pirates moving forward. Second thing you need to know from this one is that the Oriole bullpen was solid all around except for just one pitch from Nick Vespi that ended up being the difference in this game. Of course, as I mentioned, Vespi entered in the sixth inning with two outs and a runner on first in a 3-3 game. And he got ahead of Eric Hosmer 1-2, made some good pitches, and then just hung a really bad slider up in the zone. Hosmer crushed it into that triples alley, that well in Fenway Park, ended up being an RBI double that put the Red Sox up 4-3 in the sixth, and that was the last run of the game. Ended up being the winning hit for Hosmer. And Vespi turned around and got out of the inning, and then Brian Baker had a 1-2-3 seventh with a strikeout. Keegan Aiken put up a scoreless eighth to keep the Orioles in it, keep it a one-run game. The bullpen did that job, but just that one bad pitch from Vespi ended up being the difference. And there's been so many times this year where the Orioles offense has kind of, you know, picked up the bullpen and has gotten that big hit where they've held it close. That just didn't happen tonight. And that's the third thing you need to know from this game, is that really the Orioles offense seemed to only be alive in one inning of this game. And now they did have 8 hits on the day and they kind of spread them out along this game. But at the end of the day, it was really the sixth inning where the Orioles did all their damage. They scored all 3 of their runs in the sixth inning of this game, all being charged to Josh Winkowski, the Red Sox starter on the day. And it started with a Cedric Mullins single on the first pitch of the inning. They're the top of the order up, trailing 3-0. Then Adley Rutschman draws a walk, and then Anthony Santander scorches a ball, who really got robbed in this game. Santander had an 0-for-4, but with 3 hard-hit balls on the day. He scorches one, then Mountcastle grounds into a force out. You've got first and second with 2 down, and Taron Vavra on an 0-2 pitch just ropes it into the right field corner with his first career triple, a 2-run triple, makes it a 3-2 game. And then Austin Hayes just hit a little, like, you know, ground ball down the first baseline, and Winkowski just made an awful play, picked it up, couldn't get it out of his glove, then lobbed it over to first, and Hayes beat it out for an RBI infield single that tied the game at 3. Odor would then ground out against the reliever who came in, Austin Davis, to end the inning. But that was all the Oriole offense. You know, they had a few more chances. They had first and third with one out in the fourth when Austin Hayes grounded into a double play. They got Jorge Mateo to second base with one out in the seventh, but couldn't bring him home. Mullins grounded out and Rutschman struck out. And then, you know, Ramon Arias did have the 2-out single in the ninth inning, but then Mateo struck out to end the game. And the Orioles just couldn't quite seem to put the second big inning together, get that second big hit to come back again. And that brings us to the fourth thing you need to know from this one, is that, you know, the Orioles did get a lot of different contributors in this game offensively, just couldn't put together a second big inning. I mean, you had Cedric Mullins with 2 hits, 2-for-4 with 3 hard hit balls. Adley Rutschman reached on a walk. You know, Santander, even though he went with the 0-for-4, 3 hard hit balls. Ryan Mountcastle had a single and a walk. Taron Vavra had the 2 hits, including his first career triple. Austin Hayes had a single, an RBI, and 2 other hard hit balls. I mean, Ramon Arias had the ninth inning single. Jorge Mateo had a single in the seventh inning. You know, really, it was Rougned Odor and Santander with the 0-for-4s. Odor was the only guy who really had a bad game at the plate, but nobody could just put it together, string it together enough, except for the sixth inning, to get those further runs. And the fifth and final thing that you need to know from this Orioles 4-3 loss to the Red Sox is that you know, this was just kind of a weird game overall. And I think that's what I wanted to get to at the top here, is that to travel to Boston, and it helped that they had the day off Wednesday with the rain out, but to travel to Boston for one game, you know, you're in Baltimore, you go north to Boston, then you got to go back down all the way south to Tampa this weekend. Just a weird scheduling quirk, and I'm sure threw the Orioles off a little bit. You know, the Red Sox were at home all week, got to stay at home to play this game. And it stinks to lose to Boston, a team that's reeling right now, and a team you are ahead of in the standings. And the loss drops the Orioles back a half game behind the Rays, but just kind of an odd game. And the 4-3 loss does drop the Orioles to 58-53. The Rays were off Thursday, which means the Orioles will go to Tampa a half game behind the Tampa Bay Rays for the final wild card spot as they'll kick off a three-game series tonight at the Trop in the biggest series of the season. Really the biggest series since the rebuild began for the Orioles. And you can certainly say, I mean, you could argue this is the biggest series since 2016 for the Orioles. It's probably the biggest one since 2017, since they were in it, you know, that year until September. But it's been a long time since the Orioles have played in a series this important. But before we get to that series, we do want to talk about some Orioles prospects here on a little Farm Friday to end the week. And we're going to be joined here by Lindsey Crosby. He is the host of the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're going to talk about two different topics when he joins us here. First, we're going to talk about Trace Bright, the right-handed pitcher who the Orioles selected out of Auburn in the fifth round of the draft. Lindsey covered Auburn baseball this spring. He talks about Bright, his stuff on the mound, and what he could bring to the Orioles. And then we'll talk about the O's system as a whole. Lindsey gives us his thoughts on Gunnar Henderson being the new number one prospect in baseball. We talk about some guys like Grayson Rodriguez, D.L. Hall, and some other lesser-known prospects in the system, and you know how good this Orioles system just is as a whole. But that's all coming up next with Lindsey Crosby of Locked On MLB Prospects. But first, did you know that the key to sustainable weight loss is actually through your liver? It's responsible for flushing out harmful toxins and igniting your fat-burning metabolism. But thanks to modern diets rich in unhealthy and processed foods and constant exposure to thousands of environmental toxins, most of us have overworked your livers. But here's the good thing. It's now easy to rejuvenate your liver health and reignite your metabolism thanks to Liver Health Formula by Pure Health Research. Liver Health Formula contains 8 liver-boosting super nutrients, all of which work together to wake up a sluggish liver. And as a listener of our show, you can try Liver Health Formula risk-free today. So go to liverhelp.com/MLB to learn more. Again, that's getliverhelp.com/MLB to try Liver Health Formula completely risk-free. Go to getliverhelp.com/MLB right now to get started. All right, so for the first time, we welcome Lindsey Crosby into the show. He is the host of Locked On MLB Prospects here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And if you listen to his pod, you will hear a good amount about the Orioles, of course, being one of the top prospect systems in all of baseball. And Lindsey, first of all, thank you so much for hopping on Locked On Orioles for your first time.
Very, very glad to be here. Like you said, we talked the Orioles a ton. Fun fact, the favorite prospect of this pod is actually Gunnar Henderson. So there you go.
And you know, we learned that he's the favorite prospect of Baseball America earlier this week as well, when they ranked him number one. We're going to get to that in a bit, but I actually wanted to start with kind of continuing our draft coverage here on the podcast. We try to profile everybody that the Orioles select and sign, which means we won't be talking about Nolan McLean and others, unfortunately, here on this podcast. But next up is Trace Bright. And this is kind of the perfect situation here, Lindsey, because not only can we have you on to talk Orioles prospects, but you were covering Auburn baseball this spring, where Bright had a great third season with the Auburn Tigers before the Orioles selected the right-hander in the fifth round. He, you know, had a 5.13 ERA, but did get better as the season went on, 94 Ks in about 80 innings. So kind of, you know, from someone who watched him throw a lot this spring, what are the Orioles getting in what ended up being the highest pitcher that they were able to draft and sign in this year's draft?
So Trace is very much a greater than the stats kind of guy. He's one of those pitchers that, so cons first, doesn't necessarily have an out pitch. You know, he's got a fastball, sits mid-90s, velocity's fine. It sometimes fades a little bit late in games. Has a curveball and a slider, but both of them don't have, like, the slider has like a short, firm break to it, doesn't necessarily have a ton of movement on it. The curveball is a 12-6, which I absolutely love 12-6 curveballs because you can attack both lefties and righties with them. And then a changeup that's kind of inconsistent. Good fade when it's on, but kind of inconsistent. The big thing that I do love about Trace Bright is he understands how to mix the pitches up. And he knows how to react when one of them isn't there. He knows how to get outs with the other ones. And if you kind of go back and you look into some of the starts and you look at some of the games that he did at Auburn, you'd have an interesting situation where he's cruising through four or five, and then he gives up a couple runs at the end. Or what's even worse is he leaves a couple guys on and the reliever allows a couple to score. So some of those runs that you see from him are inherited runners. Some of the runs that you see are you know, very end of the game, or they have a big lead and he's just eating some innings. But overall, very good pitcher at understanding. And you can see at his time at Auburn and has he progressed. His sophomore year was thrown into starting, probably wasn't ready. And then was one of the more consistent starters all season for Auburn his junior year. Just really understands pitching and understands how to get out, and has the mental side of it there.
You mentioned that slider shape, and you know, that's a pitch that we've seen a lot recently. Now more guys kind of going back to the sweeper, kind of adding that sweeper slider. So It's interesting to see the different kind of sliders out there. But you know, what did kind of the fastball velo look like throughout this year, and what does the rest of the arsenal do for Trace? Because you mentioned that, you know, he doesn't really have that, you know, go-to out pitch. So, you know, for some guys like that, I know it's more about using that full arsenal. So what does that look like for him?
Yeah. Going back through my notes I have here in my Auburn baseball notebook. You know, he typically sits 94, 95. He does excel. Something he doesn't get enough credit for is he does excel at taking something off of a fastball when he knows you're sitting fastball. If he's in a count where like he has to throw a fastball for a strike, and he can throw a lot of his pitches on either side of the plate for a strike, but the fastball is the one he has the best control of. He's good at taking just a little bit off, maybe a 93, so that you know, you might make contact, but you might swing over it. You might, you know, not get a solid hit, but he sits around 94, 95. The good thing is I do think 6'4", 199, he does have the frame where it's projectable a bit. He can add a little bit more muscle, add a little bit more velo, and he is a very good athlete. So I could see that increasing by a couple miles an hour in the big leagues.
And then, you know, in terms of the command and the walks, I mean, it's not a crazy terrible number. You'd like it to be a little lower than about 4.2 walks per nine that he had this year. What do you kind of look at it in terms of command? Because, you know, it did get a little bit worse actually from his, you know, first full season in 21 to 2022. Now, you know, he threw 30 more innings as well. And, you know, he was pitching in bigger spots, but is the command a concern at all for him?
So the command, not necessarily. A big thing that Auburn focused on with the pitching staff is understanding that a lot of extra base hits at that level are thrown, not hit. The extra base hit came around because you put the ball in a bad spot. You missed, but you know, and you can miss, you're allowed to miss. But when you miss middle, you're asking for trouble. And so a lot of what Trace tried to focus on was living on the outside the plate. So a lot of those walks came from, he's like, okay, I'm going to throw this curveball and I'm aiming to catch the outside corner. And if I miss, I'm going to miss outside. I'd rather walk him than, you know, let him get a base hit with a guy on third. So some of it was deliberate. There is some room for improvement. And you're right. The raw numbers by themselves don't look great, but a lot of it was just trying to make sure that if you made a mistake, you weren't going to get punished for it, because that's was kind of the story of his 2021 season, was just, you know, missing, you know, when he leaves a fastball above the belt, that's where a hitter can really do damage with it. He does well pitching low, or when he misses a slider and the slider misses middle versus missing outside, a hitter can do damage with it. So that was something that they specifically kind of worked on, was if you're going to miss away.
Yeah, and he's an interesting guy because, you know, the Orioles took a pitcher in the fifth round in 2021 in Carlos Tavera, who was kind of a small school guy at UT Arlington, not facing the best competition, but had these gaudy numbers. Mm-hmm. This year in the fifth round, they go with Trace Bright, who, not necessarily the numbers that jump off the page, but pitching in the SEC every weekend, facing the best hitters in college baseball, and has the underlying numbers and I'm sure, you know, the TrackMan statistics that want the Orioles obviously to jump all over him. So my last thing on Bright is, you know, with Nolan McLain not signing, you know, we weren't sure if he was going to be a two-way player with the O's or maybe just be a pitcher, but Bright becomes the top drafted pitcher by the Orioles this year. What does kind of the ceiling you think look like for him? Because obviously the O's would love for him to be a starter at the big league level, but what do you think that, you know, kind of top 1 or 2% outcome for him looks like?
I think top 1 or 2% is probably, you know, a number 3 or 4. Most realistic is probably a 4 or 5. Something where having a strong trio of secondaries that you can throw for strikes gives you a legitimate starter's arsenal, and you have the frame, and you're an athlete. But like you said, the walk rate's a little high. I think it's for his career, it's about 10%. You know, and then missing with the, you know, getting that fastball location a little better, and then just not having a carrying pitch does kind of limit the ceiling a bit. But I do see him as somebody, you know, number 4, number 5, can go out there and pitch 140 innings for you in a season and be that guy to take the ball every fifth day. That was the big thing for Auburn. I think he was the only starter to pitch every weekend from the beginning of the season to the end. So that's the big thing, is availability is a skill. And Trace Bright is an athlete that can compete and ultimately can throw strikes.
And you know, getting into the Orioles system, you know, we'll see what they want to do with him as well. You know, you never know, because an arsenal in college could look a little different once a major league team gets your hands on him as well. But we'll get back to our chat with Lindsey Crosby in just a second, talk more about the current Orioles system, guys like Gunnar Henderson and who Lindsey likes in one of the top systems in baseball. But first, got to tell you about BlueNile.com, because whether you're ready to pop the question or just celebrating a milestone moment, you can find jewelry as unique as her with the modern convenience of online shopping at BlueNile.com. They have simple online tools that let you choose the diamond shape, size, and clarity, as well as the setting style. And if you're looking for that fine jewelry, but you're having trouble choosing, or you just have questions you need answered, Blue Nile has jewelry experts on hand 24/7 to help you find a memorable gift at every budget. So make your moments sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And going on now is the Blue Nile Anniversary Sale. You can save up to 40% on classic fine jewelry pieces and 25% on engagement ring settings. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by betonline.net, the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs. You can find your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. And you can find news on every league. It's not just Major League Baseball, of course, getting into the playoff run, but we've got the NFL coming soon, the NBA and the NHL right behind it. And every weekend, of course, there's combat sports, there's esports, and even golf as well. And BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for everything for your sports wagering needs. So head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today at BetOnline, where the game starts. So we're here with Lindsey Crosby, the host of Locked On MLB Prospects here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And Lindsey, this was a perfect time to have you on, because not just did we want to talk about Trace Bright and his time at Auburn, but exciting time for the Orioles with a whole lot of new prospect lists coming out this week from the different outlets. I think the craziest one I did see was Prospects Live put out theirs on Thursday. Mm-hmm. They had 8 Orioles in their top 100. 8 in the top 100. Now that is kind of the top of the line. But where I want to start, of course, is Gunnar Henderson. Baseball America named him the new number one prospect in baseball on Monday. And so I pose you the question, do you agree with Baseball America? Do you think Gunnar Henderson is the top prospect in baseball? And if not, where do you think he kind of falls in among the other top players in the minor leagues right now?
To me, he's definitely, like, you can't argue that he's not at least a top 3. I do think he's number 1. I've seen people who have him 2 or 3. But I think when you can look at the performance that he's put up, he has a 151 WRC plus. It's third highest among all hitters in AAA that have at least 200 at-bats. And he's also one of the youngest players in AAA. So, I mean, like on the season, slash line of 300, 427, 546. on pace for a 2020 season for home runs and stolen bases. It's something where, like, as the prospect apparatus, as the industry, we throw around the words five-tool player way too much. We say it way more than we should. Gunnar Henderson's one of the few people that legitimately looks like he has five tools. Now, the thing is, none of them are like the best in baseball. He's not the most powerful hitter. He doesn't have the best contact tool or the best arm, but he is above average to plus at everything. And he's a lot more valuable and deserving of the number one prospect spot if he stays at short, if he does move to third, which I think may or may not be possible. Part of that depends on the other guys around him. But he still profiles to be, I think, somebody who will contend for all-star games and to be a star in MLB. We are big fans of Gunnar Henderson here on Locked On MLB Prospects. And fun fact, and this is unrelated to loving Gunnar Henderson, he was drafted by the Orioles in 2019 while committed to go to Auburn.
He's, you know, what could have been? What could have been him in the middle of that Auburn Tigers lineup? Maybe they... Mm-hmm. Take home a title in Omaha the last couple of years if they've got Gunnar Henderson. But the Orioles were happy to get him, you know, sign him out of high school. And now, you know, he's just been one of the fastest risers in all of minor league baseball. And it was, you know, great to see him. Even at the end of last year when he got up to Double A, people start to take notice. And then all of a sudden he starts the year at Double A. He just shoots through the system. You know, he's hitting basically just as well at Triple A. He's hit lefties even better at Triple A. He talked about that in an article in the Baltimore Sun this week, saying that, you know, he had some bad numbers against lefties in Double A. And he basically said, I see more consistent lefties in Triple A. It's the most consistent lefties I've seen. And he basically was like, that's why I'm better, because I'm seeing them more. So it's almost just like he just had to get used to some left-handers. It wasn't like he's, you know, got this big hole in his swing. And that's another reason why he is the number one prospect. But, you know, the Orioles
I actually pulled the splits for him. And as of Wednesday, he 1/3 of all of his at-bats in AAA have been lefties. He has an 813 OPS against lefties, significantly better than when he was in Bowie. And something where, I mean, Tim Gibbons has talked about it. Like, he specifically has worked on hitting lefties. He's also cut his strikeout rate from 30% to 20% year over year. And he's lowered his swinging strike by about 2%. And so I know that there's some folks who are asking for him to get called up now. But know that while he's in Norfolk with Tim Gibbons, he has legitimately been getting significantly better at the game of baseball.
We love Tim Gibbons on this podcast. Frankly, the coaching staff in Norfolk, I think, is one of the best around the minors, with Buck Britton, who in the next 10 years or maybe less is going to be a big league manager.
Less than 10.
Justin Ramsey has been just outstanding working with these Orioles pitchers. And then Tim Gibbons is kind of the guy who goes a little under the radar, just because he's not as front-facing as those other two guys, but he does a great job with the hitters as well. Now, this Orioles system is stacked, as I said. I mean, shout out to Prospects Live, our new number one favorite prospect publication here on the podcast, after putting 8 Orioles in their new top 100 on Thursday. But they've got a long list of those guys. And among the guys who are kind of around that Orioles top 10, you know, who is your next favorite guy to watch in the Orioles system? Give me a pitcher and give me another hitter not named Gunnar Henderson who you're excited for, not just, you know, watching him on MILB TV, but you're excited to get him to Baltimore.
Okay. Kyle Stowers, the outfielder. We'll go with that, with the outfielders first. So he's a guy, a 2019 second rounder out of Stanford. And it was something where the story there was great exit velo. He's got power potential. And then the question was, how well would he hit? It's something where when you watch him swing, I mean, it is violent. It is fun to watch because you can imagine the baseball exploding when he hits it. But he's gotten better at the actual job of hitting. The thing we talk about a lot on my podcast is power's only as good as your hit tool is. And he's gotten significantly better at that. He's cut his strikeout rate down about 9% this year from last year. Swinging strike rate is low. And specifically, the thing he's worked on that makes me excited to see him debut soon, if he does, is working with velo up in the zone. The elevated fastball is such a big part of MLB right now. And so he specifically, and shout out Tim Gibbons for helping him with this, but specifically has gone and worked on handling velocity up in the zone and worked on less chasing out of the zone. And so I think he can play center field in a pinch. You got Cedric Mullins. You put him into right field with that plus arm he has, that good speed he has. And it's something where I think he has the potential to be much better than, you know, the 10th or 11th best prospect in the system when it's all said and done. I think he has the potential to be a top three or four player as the system stands right now.
Yeah, and Kyle Stowers, we talk about a lot on this podcast because he's had over 400 plate appearances in AAA now. He was the co-minor league player of the year for the Orioles last year with, you may have heard of him, Adley Rutschman.
that so, guy, yeah.
You know, Orioles fans, especially after trading Trey Mancini, opened up some at-bats on this major league team, a team that is competing for a playoff spot right now. And it just feels, you know, he's got 18 homers now. You know, he's got, I think, almost 50 extra base hits at this point. In AAA, it's just time to get him to the big leagues. He might not play every day because the Orioles still have Hayes, Mullins, Santander pretty much locked down in the outfield. But between DH and giving those guys a day off, you can play Stowers 4 to 5 times a week and make your team better right now. He's maxed out on what he can do at AAA. But turn to the pitchers, because we know the Orioles have two high-level pitching prospects right now. So I'm assuming this question is, are you a Grayrod guy or are you a DL Hall guy?
So I am a, I think Grayson Rodriguez is great. He's a lovely person. I'm excited to see what he'll do. Give me some DL Hall, a lefty who can hit 100 miles an hour with a plus slider. Give me that guy 7 days a week and Sunday after church. I think that ceiling great, you know, Grayson Rodriguez has a higher ceiling, absolutely has a higher ceiling. He looks like he legitimately could potentially be a number one pitcher, an ace, which you only, you know, you'd have maybe 12 of those in baseball. He has the tools to do that. But DL Hall is tons of fun to watch. I think at this point, you know so much about him. Worst case scenario, you're looking at a high leverage late inning reliever, a closer type, but just, I mean, 100 mile an hour fastball. He sits 97 on that thing. Can touch triple digits. The slider is a plus pitch. Curveball is slower. I wish it was a little more vertical. It's a little kind of two plane, and it doesn't necessarily do exactly, you know, it's not great either direction. Just make it more vertical and go all for it. But and then work on the changeup a bit. But I just love watching DL Hall pitch. So to me, despite the injuries, I think DL Hall is the guy. He's on the 40-man roster, so you can call him up. And all it takes is a 25-man roster move. So I want to see DL Hall get a cup of coffee at the end of the year this year.
Yeah, I honestly, you know, had been on the train so long of call him up, have him be a starter immediately. But now that he's not up yet and the Orioles are in a postseason race, I don't think it hurts to Adam Wainwright him, John Smoltz him, if you have to, because we saw him in big league spring training throw a couple innings out of the bullpen. He was just coming in facing big league lefties, 100, 100, 90 mile per hour slider, see you later. Yeah. And, you know, if the Orioles could have that at the back end of already a top five bullpen in baseball, and then, you know what, you do next year coming out of spring training, you move him back to a starter. But for the last 2 months to get him in the big leagues, don't think it's a bad idea. But Lindsay, the last thing I wanted to ask you before you go is, everybody's got those prospect crushes who, you know, aren't necessarily on everybody's mind, not necessarily those top five guys. For me, I don't know if I'm stealing your guy, but I love Joey Ortiz. I called his games in summer ball 5 years ago when he was a little known prospect out of New Mexico State playing for a bad summer ball team, actually in Baltimore. And I said, this guy's going to be good. And Joey Ortiz, no one can get him out in AA right now. I was wondering if you had anybody in the Orioles system who's not, you know, the Henderson, the Rodriguez, the Hall, you know, even the Jackson Holiday, who you feel like, you know what, this guy's going to surprise people and be a good big leaguer.
So for me, because I watch prospects all the time, I see so many guys that fit the conventional profile. So I am attracted to the guys that are very outside of the mold. So the guy that I'm really excited, and he hasn't done much this year, the guy I'm really excited to watch is Jared Beck. So 13th rounder out of St. Leo, but the 7 foot tall lefty. So, I mean, he throws mid 90s. I could see him being a bullpen guy with a shorter stint. He has fantastic velocity for being so incredibly long and having such long levers. He's got good command despite that. Throw strikes. I think the player development staff's really going to kind of enjoy working with Jaron Beck. And I think that simply because of the unique angle that fastball comes in on, He's going to cause a lot of problems. And it's something where I think we're all kind of looking at the velocity. Oh, he throws low to maybe mid 90s. He's not going to be effective. But when you think about the extension and how close that ball is to the plate when he releases it, how it's going to play up, and then the unique approach angle, I think Jared Beck's going to be a guy that really can surprises a lot of people with how effective he can be out of the bullpen.
Lindsay, I'm 6'4", and I can't wait to see Jared Beck in person for him to make me feel short. That's what I'm most excited for when he gets up to full season ball, maybe up here in Aberdeen, and I can go take a peek at Jared Beck. But Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us. Let everybody know where they can find you and where they can find, of course, your great podcast here on this very network.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. My show, Locked On MLB Prospects, available wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. You know, we can find us on Twitter at Locked On Farm. If you have questions for the show, we do mailbags every single Monday. Everything in there comes from listeners. You can send it to my Twitter, the show's Twitter, or email us, lockedonmlbprospects@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Lindsay, and enjoy continuing to watch some of the best young players in baseball. And a lot of them, luckily, reside in the Baltimore Orioles system.
Thanks for having me.
So our thanks again to Lindsay Crosby, the host of Locked On MLB Prospects here on the Locked On Podcast Network, for joining us. Talk about Gunnar Henderson and the Orioles system, but also talk about Trace Bright, the right-hander from Auburn that the Orioles selected in the fifth round of this year's draft. We haven't seen him debut as a pro yet. Hopefully that will come soon enough in the FCL, but an exciting pitching prospect with an interesting profile that the Orioles have added to the system. But that'll do it for us for the week. If you've been following along here on the podcast this week, we talked about doing a giveaway. If I did reach 1,000 subscribers on the Locked On Orioles YouTube channel, thank you all for getting us well over 1,000 subscribers. Continue to subscribe, like, and comment on the videos. And coming up on Monday when we return, of course, we will recap the three-game series coming up this weekend at the Trop between the Orioles and the Rays. But also, I will announce what that giveaway item is going to be, and again, how you can get that giveaway item. So remember, you got to be subscribed to the Locked On Orioles YouTube channel. On Monday's episode, we'll announce what we're giving away and the one further step you have to take to get in on this Locked On Orioles giveaway after we, of course, recap the Orioles-Rays weekend series. But that's all coming up on Monday's episode. Until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.